Have you ever been accused of railroading your players? Do you dream of a tabletop group that treats you and your fantasy world like a real world? Both of these questions deal with player agency, which for some people is a very important topic, but that brings up the most obvious follow-up question, which is it just an illusion? Welcome back to How to Be a Better DM. This is the show that has been helping dungeon masters, new and old, for over 150 episodes, find new, faster, and easier ways to reach more fulfilling storytelling. And today, I'm your host, Justin Lewis, joined here with Caden and Tanner. Go
Hi.
ahead and say hi. Yeah.
What's up?
And we are going to talk about player agency and everything that talks about and deals with. So, without any preamble, aside from the preamble I just gave, let's dive into the topic. And start off with the generalized question of what is player agency in your guys' views?
I'll get started with that. So, in my mind, we're playing an RPG, like a creative game. Player agency is like, okay, if they want to do something, like, can they? Like, how much actual ability do they have to go over and talk to an NPC that you didn't plan on them talking to, or to do a different course of action? Like, maybe instead of conquering the dungeon, can they build a fort and have a sleepover in it? I think it's just a matter of, are they able to do what they want to do?
Interesting. Kaden, what do you think?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I mean, it's like, do you have a sandbox, or do you have a plot line that is designed to follow? And that's what they're going to do, so.
So I think then the next question is, why do some DMs view player agency as wildly important?
I think it's because so many of them feel like agency is, well, I mean, I think for everyone, it's a matter of, are players going to go along with what you want? We talk about railroading a lot, but like, are they actually going to go along with the main story you did, or are they just going to be little murder hobos and just derail everything, you know?
So it sounds like then agency is important for some DMs because it deals a lot with their preparation and making the dungeon master think on their feet. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because for me as a DM, like, I put too much effort into planning, and then if they don't go along with it, it feels like a personal slight, like they're insulting my usage of time. Or rather, I'm just upset that I put in all that work and it didn't end up doing anything. So I think that that's why the agency becomes such a, I don't know, such a conflict point where, and that's what I'm working on a lot of times, is just, being a little bit more loosey-goosey, being willing to think on my feet, create new storylines, or kind of do what the players want to do, but find a way to kind of curve it back into what I had planned,
Yeah. And I think actually, Caden, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I was just going to say, I was thinking about that, how much agency do players actually have in my campaigns? And I think that when things start to go in a direction that I'm, unprepared for, or I'm getting sick of improvising, I do tend to kind of drop more hints towards the plot line. I'm like, okay, well, how could I get them to go investigate this? Maybe there needs to be like another clue that pops up, or another event that draws them in, because that first one obviously wasn't enticing enough.
Yeah, I think that hints on, the question that I opened up the episode with, which is player agency an illusion? And I think that's such a fascinating question because often, in my opinion, dungeon masters are almost like magicians, right? Where we let the players think, but we orchestrate it in a way so they think what we want them to think, right? But this goes back to what Tanner mentioned, which is the players doing what the players want to do, right? And we're all people, and I think we all want to do what we want to do, right? Because we have wants. So you know, we know that player agency is somewhat important, and we're going to tackle the question of, is it an illusion later on? But for the players to feel like there's player agency, what elements do you think need to be present for that to take place?
I think there probably just needs to be a variety of, like Tanner was saying, NPCs to talk to. There needs to be a variety of places in their immediate area that they can reach. There just needs to be wherever they're going, it needs to be auto populating, you know, like on Minecraft. That feel like, to me, that would feel like agency. You know, you wander into a random camp and there's no way the dungeon master could have prepared for it, and you're speaking with somebody and there's an entirely new plot line that's forming.
Yeah. Along with that, I think you said, you know, there's no way a dungeon master could prepare for it. I think DMs need to have plans for the unplanned situations, you know, whether that's like a random table that you can roll on for like random encounters, right? Or yeah. Or you have, you know, or maybe you just know the world and you've spent enough time world building that it's like, okay, so they went off track. They're not going to the town I planned. Fine. I don't care. I know that around here, there's a manticore or a bandit camp that, you know, I could go have, that they could go have fun with. Right. And that's like part of the world that I built, whatever it is. Like, you want to have these kind of side paths just in mind, so that if they do venture off, maybe you don't even like think like, oh, in this part of the world, it has this thing. It's like, no, I have a list of random encounters. They went off path. So random encounter number one, you know, or experience with an NPC. I think there's multiple ways you can plan for an unplanned situation. And that's an important part of allowing player agency, so that you aren't so deathly terrified of it as a DM, you know?
Yeah. I was just watching Pirates of the Caribbean with my wife, and it got me thinking how many rumors they're dropping during that entire, first and second movie. And I realized that's something that's lacking in my campaign that really helps with that. It's, you know, if you're going somewhere and these NPCs are dropping rumors, that adds to the overall story so much without even necessarily needing an encounter or different things. I guess that could be another way to kind of like help refocus players when needed.
Yeah. And yeah. I really liked what you said, Caden, about Minecraft, because, you know, it goes in line very much with what Tanner said, right? In Minecraft, if you haven't played before, you wander in one direction until you find something that you're looking for, right? So sometimes it's a village, and you know that villages are going to populate, right? The kind of the generic cookie cutter village are going to populate. So to Tanner's point, you can absolutely take even plot related encounters and be like, oh, that was going to be in the other direction, but oh, it just so happens that you run into it, you know? And you can still choose what you want to do. But I also like what you said there, Caden, about the rumors, because both of those elements kind of go back to world building, right? If your world feels real, then your players will naturally feel like they can do anything they want in it. If they hear rumors of something major going on, they're going to be like, wow, this is probably going to affect us regardless of what we do. And I think that leads into the next question of kind of the flip side of player agency. How do you handle consequences, or how dungeon masters might define consequences?
I think it's important to understand your players with consequences, right? Because there are times when your players absolutely realize they're pushing the boundaries and that they're doing something ridiculous. And when that happens, like, you kind of need to decide, like, oh, were they just trying to have fun? And not just them wanting to, like, just exploit this world. Then in that case, maybe you're lighter with the consequences. Maybe you don't even focus that much on the consequences. And you just keep, like, oh, this whole domino effect that you caused, just kind of a funny situation. Like, oh, it, you know, isn't that hilarious? Now you're gone. Other times, like, they turned the whole town against them. And it's a town where you're like, the players were really acting kind of egregiously here. Like, in cases like that, it's okay for them to, you know, end up in the stocks, to maybe even die. Like, I think it really depends on what you can tell of your player's intention as well, right?
That response was really thought-provoking for me personally, I think. So, first of all, good job, Tanner. But, like, just when you said, think about when the, like, are the players just having fun? And I think that can color your whole perspective when you DM and give your players consequences. So kind of an example here of my own personal campaign, and Caden, you're probably going to get a laugh at this, but my party was in the Astral Sea, and they were on a planet, and they were trying to get back to the material plane, which in my universe was planets, right? It was a planet that they were trying to fly to. It was kind of mixing sci-fi and fantasy. So essentially, through a mix of their ingenuity and my lack of capability as a DM, they were able to con a hard money lender out of, I think it was 70,000 gold pieces, something like that.
It was, yeah.
Pretty large sum. And, you know, in hindsight, there were a lot of things that I didn't do right. Just thinking from a sci-fi perspective, like, naturally they would have safeguards and things like that. However, that particular evening, I was quite frustrated with myself, right? And I felt like a not great DM. But I after hearing your response, Tanner, I think here's what I should have done. For one, obviously, my party did want to go back to the material plane. They said they were kind of done with the astral plane. But two, they got a cool ship. Like, they used the money to buy a spaceship, essentially, which is cool, right? Yeah. What I should have done was allowed them to keep the spaceship, right? And they did. Ken, you'll probably have color commentary on this. But they were able to keep the spaceship, but naturally a debt collector agency came and came to try and collect on the ship, and that forced them to lose the ship. But what might have been more fun would have been to let them get back to the material plane and then keep them being hounded by this debt collection agency over a long period of time, and sort of almost make it like, like a criminal organization, crime boss type thing, where Jabba the Hutt's always going after Han Solo. And it's just kind of a recurrent theme where they could come up with new schemes to pay off the money, or they could, you know, do lots of more things, because it seemed like revolving on this, they had a lot more fun. Whereas me, I was like, oh yeah, natural consequence. They're going to come and, you know, get the money as much as possible, as soon as possible. So that was one example of what I'm saying.
So then I think what it comes down to is probably just, what it always comes down to, does this add to the overall story? You know, is this more interesting because of this, you know, this new plot line that I'm introducing?
Absolutely. And I think even more than that, right? Is it more fulfilling, right? Or does it have opportunity to become more fulfilling? Because I think one of the natural tendencies of Dungeon Masters is to allow the deviance from the main plot line, but then close it off as soon as they see an opening and they're like, yeah, that was fun, but let's get back to important business, rather than kind of seeing where it's going to take them.
Yeah. So like categorizing it as a side quest. Yeah,
almost. Even like a side story arc.
Yeah, and I think that players, like, they have different kind of motivations to get into different stuff. And if you realize that, then you'll kind of realize, oh, is this a side tangent that just, frankly, is only going to derail everything? You know, if a player wants to start, you know, a side business in the game, that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? But if you can tell they intend to spend a lot of time on that, then that's a great time to be like, hey, I love this idea. Let's between sessions talk about how you're doing this in the background, you know, and then we can just touch on it as we go through the adventure. And other times it's the players just trying to get as many benefits as they can. Like, I think the gold piece one, like stealing the 70,000 gold pieces, you could have gone either way with that, right? Because obviously the players were like, oh, we saw this opportunity, let's have fun with it. There are going to be other players who look at that same thing and are like, their min-maxy kind of mindset gets in, which isn't always bad, right? But when that happens, sometimes you need to curb it and be like, no, you can't just get all the benefits. But on the other hand, sometimes they're just mostly focused on like, oh, this is a fun situation where we can take advantage. And you need to kind of play in that space too, if they're in that mindset.
Yeah, it kind of depends on how much time you have to, you know, spend on DMing, right? Because if you don't have that time in between sessions to go through those, you know, less important plot points, then maybe you really do need to kind of, railroad a lot more.
When setting any scene, it's imperative that you tap into the five senses. When it comes to sound, one of the best ways to do that is with music, ambiance, and sound effects. And that's why we've teamed up with Monument Studios. Monument Studios provides easy-to-use soundboards perfect for dungeon mastering in any setting. If you want to see this in action, go to fantasy-plus.com and get 10% off of your first month when you get their Fantasy Plus app by using the code BETTERDM at checkout. Again, that's fantasy-plus.com and BETTERDM at checkout. Use music to amplify your gameplay.
I'm curious, I was just thinking about like our live play show. How much do you think agency plays a role in that? And do you think that it's important for you guys personally?
I mean, for me, I feel like it has been more or less railroady, but I think that's also true of a lot of bigger campaigns at the start. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's like Jake in many ways. And this is an important thing on player agency. If you don't actually have a plot thread or a goal, and if it's not communicated well, and if your players don't get enough time to spend thinking about it, then it's so easy for the adventure to just become, you know, the story of three guys doing a bunch of random stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And now it can instead be the story of three guys trying to, you know, combat the lethargy or free themselves from debt slavery while also doing fun side stuff, of course. But you have to at least have that through thread of the main plot. And sometimes you get that by just like hammering it in. Other times people like start out with a more loosey-goosey thread of like, oh, you're doing a bunch of random stuff. And then they kind of work it in, like the main plot, like they weave it into everything. And then eventually you come to that. So there's multiple ways to do it, you know?
Yeah. I also think that I'm of the opinion that railroading isn't bad. And I know that sounds really bad, but if you've ever hosted a one-shot, you know that you got to railroad, right? You got to, like, you have a story that you've prepared, and unless everyone just wants to kind of futz around the whole session, then you as the DM need to take them through that interesting story. And I think the same thing is true for timed sessions. I listened to a podcast where, you know, it talked about this. And if you have only a limited amount of time as the DM, you need to get them through what you've prepared or find some other plot that is salient and important to the players. But I think as it regards to our actual play show, spoiler alert, I think it's actually a really interesting use of railroading, because from the start, the players start in hell, right? A place where your choices are limited, naturally. And I think this, maybe we can talk about in a sec, how circumstance limits your choice and how DMs can use that. But as far as I'm concerned, I feel like the main theme of the story so far is three guys who are kind of on this conveyor belt that they don't have control of, and they're trying to figure out a way to get off it, right? Like they almost have so little control. And at every juncture, we're just sitting there thinking, like, how do we get out of this? And I think that's almost interesting, because we're forced to exist within these circumstances, doing everything we can to get out of them, which is pretty common in life. Like, I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, and this is kind of what I was thinking about, is that we are in the actual play show, we're like very we're on like a very guided story, you know, but we throw Jake so many curveballs, I feel like. And there were so many times that I was just amazed at how things turned out, you know, because it felt like there was a very clear direction things were going, and they did not go in the way I was anticipating. And so in that way, it really comes down to, you know, player expectations more than anything else. You know, like, did your players feel like they were on a, you know, being railroaded, or did they feel like they had choices?
Yeah, and I don't know. So, Caden, kind of throwing a partial question back at you. Like, do you hope that our campaign does open up to some extent in the future, and you get a little bit more freedom to kind of just go whichever direction you want, or do you kind of like that it's a little bit more directed at this point?
Well, that's what I was, you know, that's why I'm like intrigued by this, is because I'm really enjoying the plot. You know, I really feel like we're writing an interesting book, you know, that I like to tune into myself while I'm like going about my daily life. So, so I don't know the answer to that question yet. You know, I think that there are things that I'd like to accomplish in that game. You know, like, I want to kill Sheriff Dawn. Yep. And I think Elon's made that pretty clear. We've all made that pretty clear. So I don't know.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it, and maybe it's getting into this too early, but the question that Justin had at the start about, oh, are other question, are other options an illusion? Like, do people have other options? I think that in many ways, like, you think about life, like, think about people that you know. As much as we like to believe, especially in the U.S., like, oh, anyone can be whatever they want to be. It's like, yeah, but what are they usually? They're usually what, you know, their parents or their friends have been, you know? They're usually, like, even people who kind of wildly meander off of what most of the people in their life do, it's because they knew someone who kind of mentored them in that way, or told them, hey, this is a possibility.
Yeah.
And I think when you think about choices that your players do, a lot of it shows, like, it's less about the players not listening, and it's more about how did you present the choices? Like, which, like, was the main choice that you were presenting actually interesting? Because I know a lot of players who, the moment that a DM isn't like railroading them, they just try and do anything other than the main story. And to some extent, that shows that they weren't as, you know, as enthralled by the idea of the main plot, right? And they're looking for something else to do. And so in many ways, it's like, yeah, I think that there is an element of like, hey, a lot of choices are, it's less about what do the players want to do, and it's more about how did you present the options, you know?
I think, honestly, so I often view D&D as sort of like, how do I say this? Like, if you can imagine like a wave form, how as it's moving from left to right, it expands and then it contracts and it kind of pinches together. I see D&D and player choice very similar. So there are instances where the player choices are pretty ample, right? You have a vast amount. And then there are kind of these junction points where you have to do something, right? Like when you enter a dungeon, you can't just steal something from someone because there's no one there to steal. So I think a lot of the choices that are available to dungeon players or D&D players, sorry, that was the opposite of dungeon masters. Yeah, I think a lot of the choices are dictated by circumstances. And even thinking about our actual play show, I think Jake does a pretty good job of letting us have free agency within the circumstances. So in episode 3, yeah. Again, spoiler alert, we literally fall from the sky into the ocean. And as we're falling, he says, "What do you do?" And we're like, "Well, there's not much you can do. We don't have parachutes. We have nothing. Can mm-hmm. we look around for a place to see?" And he's like, "Yeah, you see three places that might work. Everything else probably is going to kill you." And with that, we have, you know, the illusion of choice, but probably Jake prepared these three instances. And obviously mm-hmm. we didn't end up choosing, well, we chose one, but we didn't get it. I think one of the best ways to give your players choices is to kind of wade into this model of like the waveform. So in certain instances, expand their choices, but they're still confined, right? And I think one of the ways you do that in, you know, let's say they go into a big city, they don't have any pressing concerns. Well, there's still the major plot line going on in the background. And if they do nothing, then so-and-so bad guy is going to take over the world because they did nothing. And I think using those circumstances, not in a pushy way, but in just a simple logical way of, yeah, it took this much amount of time, you can sort of get your players to react to the main plot line and hopefully keep it interesting.
Yeah. And I actually like that example from the campaign about, you know, the different options when we were falling from the sky. Because as we went along, like, I don't know about you guys, but it felt like one option became more clear just for survival. You know? Yeah. Because it was like, oh, you can land in the desert. And we're like, well, that's not great. That's not soft.
Well, saved us a lot of money, though.
I was actually just thinking that. I was like, could we have saved money? And then like
not on hospital bills.
Not on hospital bills. And then the other option was like this island, which my character knew was like poisonous. And I was like, well, that's not great. I don't need to breathe, but what about these two? And I think that that's in many ways how DMs go about it. Which is fine if you're like, hey, I don't actually want to give them that many choices. Is like, hey, you present different choices and you have prepared the other choices, but try and make the most attractive option the one you want, right?
Do you love these podcast episodes but aren't always able to listen to them? Do you learn better reading information rather than listening to it? Here's what you can do. Go to sessionzerostudios.com/newsletter. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get tips and tricks sent directly to your inbox in written format that you can read and reference whenever you want. You'll get tips that we don't share on the podcast and bonus techniques that, frankly, no one has ever heard before. Again, sessionzerostudios.com/newsletter and get those free tips and techniques right to your inbox every week.
Otherwise, you know, if you do want true like freedom and for your players to decide which direction to go, I'd say try and make each one equally attractive, but just different, you know, because otherwise like players, unless they're very loose, like whimsical, they'll go with whatever keeps them the most safe, right? That's like, rather than going into a new room like guns blazing, they'll do 1,000 perception checks to see if there's a trap, right? And that's, you just have to keep that in mind when you're presenting options that like, hey, they're going to be very cautious. So if I really want them to consider certain options, I've got to present it as like a walk through a park, you know, just super easy, not dangerous, or all of them equally dangerous, either or.
Yeah, I love that. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our time today. So I'm going to give each of us one last bit of a final tip when it regards to players' agency. But before we do that, and while you guys are thinking, let me just explain. Listener, we want to try an experiment, right? So we want to give you the chance to speak up and give out your experience on this show. So if you want to, if you have a tip for Dungeon Masters or players to make the game better, you can go to SpeakPipe. Dang, I had one chance and I messed it up. Go to SpeakPipe.com/BetterDungeonMaster. That's one word. Okay, SpeakPipe.com/BetterDungeonMaster. It's going to be in the show notes. You can just record a short audio of yourself giving your tip. Make sure to leave your name so we know who you are. And if you want us to tag you when we share this on Instagram, leave your Instagram as well. But that way you can join the show, become a part of it, and share the expertise, because naturally we're not the only people who know what we're talking about. You also have a lot to share. Now, Tanner, Caden, and myself, who wants to go first in sharing your last bit of advice?
Well, before we go into advice, I wonder, this has been fun for me to talk about, and I wonder if listeners would enjoy a part two to this, because I think that there's a lot more that we could talk about. So, you know, also send feedback and let us know whether you'd like a part two.
Yeah.
Very good.
I guess I'll start because, and we didn't really touch on this because we ran out of time, but I think it's important to have players be aware of their own characters' goals and motivations. I think, because I was talking about, like, hey, you need to know the player's mindset when you react to them kind of going off path, right? In many ways, the players themselves need to be aware of their characters' goals and motivations. And then you can actually keep them more accountable. And I think any element of player choice, it's like, it gets easy to treat these characters like just like random husks with the players inside of it. And then it gets easy to be like, oh, it's just players being players. Like, oh, of course they did them. You know, they murdered another NPC. But it's like, no, would their character have murdered an NPC just randomly? And if you make it so that the players need to know that about their characters, then of course you can keep them more accountable for certain crazy choices, right?
So when you say murdered an NPC, you're not talking about, I don't know, any blonde-haired sea elf that has an ant-headed friend who asked him to murder some, you know, voiceless person, right? You're not talking about that.
Oh, no, he had it coming. It was good.
Glad you think so.
Awesome. What about you, Caden?
I think that my last bit of advice from this episode is just, you know, talk to your players and understand their expectations for the campaign. Or, you know, I mean, you might just have a pretty good idea already if they're friends. You know, if everyone's getting together just for the camaraderie and for the fun, and this is a social thing, then, you know, you might shape your campaign and your storylines differently than you would if everybody is really interested in a good story. You know, I think that the three of us are a good audience for Jake because we are, everything is very story driven. You know, we love our books and plot lines. And so that's what is going to hook us and what's going to make it fun for us.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Just always direct it back to what's fun.
Well, as far as me, the tip that I would give you is, one, make sure your microphone is working how you want it to. But two, is hiding what you do as a DM from your players. And I know for those of you who are lawful good, just like myself, this seems shady, this seems underhanded, but really what you're doing is you're giving them the best experience. They come to you so you can lie to them. That's a really weird way to say it, but they don't want to peek behind the curtain because that ruins the immersion, right? That ruins the mystique and the flair. So when it comes to railroading your players and giving them the illusion of choice, it doesn't matter if you choose more player agency or less. What matters is how much the player perceives. So make sure that they perceive that they can do anything they want, right? Whether it just so happens that when they try to steal from someone, you say, oh yeah, before you steal, you notice that that person has like five swords. So do you want to steal from them? Probably not. You know, you can do things like that, obviously make it a little bit more tasteful, but absolutely pay attention to the player's perception of what's going on. Well, thank you for listening to today's episode, player. Again, like Caden said, if you like this content and you want to see part two, message us on Instagram or send up smoke signals, however you can reach us. Obviously, SpeakPipe, you can do that. But thank you, Tanner and Caden, for taking time out of your day to join me today. And player, listener, Dungeon Master, we're going to be back next week for another awesome episode. Obviously, you can check out our other show, The Pact and Boon. But until next week, let's go ahead and roll initiative.